Awakening. You have tuned in, surfed into Awakenings Radio. I want to welcome you. Great to connect with all of you that are listening through the various outlets, and hello to all that are listening via CosmicDimensions.com, and welcome to all that will be listening to Awakenings via the archives. We want to welcome you with much peace and light, and welcome you to this wonderful morning, afternoon, or evening, wherever you are listening from. I'm your host, Michelle Mache, and as I like to say, co-pilot. Great to connect with all of you. And those of you that may be listening for the first time, just share a little bit about Awakenings. Awakenings Radio, we have a focus here of support and insight for conscious living. This is a place that tracks the stages and helps to map the process of awakening, individual and collective awakening through the shifts that are occurring. Awakenings is a place that hosts dialogues and interviews with spiritual teachers, healers, conscious experts, visionaries, awakened leaders, authors, and conscious beings and people of all walks of life that are focused on living consciously. Awakenings reflects the bridging point between science, art, and spirituality. Awakenings is a timely relaying of essential information, insights, and tools for transformation and spiritual unfoldment. And Awakenings is also part of the converging flow. And what that means is that this is doctrine and dogma free. It's free from titles and supposed tos. It's really about that consciousness that is us, that life force animating energy that nudges us or beckons us to our next evolutionary step, our next evolutionary process, our next unfoldment, happens to all people, all walks of life. Whether you're a student, an engineer, a mother, a father, a daughter, a child, whether you're a teacher, whether you're a politician, whether you study physics, quantum physics, metaphysics, esoteric wisdom, whether you're consciously on a path or not, you can be in a awakening state or find yourself in the process of awakening more to the truth of who you really are and wanting to live more authentically. And many of you listening may even remember perhaps one of your first awakenings, because awakenings obviously happen in stages. And of course, when one is awakening, I know I've seen this with people that I've worked with in the past, when one is awakening and perhaps is not on a consciously spiritual path or focused on spiritual integration in their life, one of the key components to awakening is that you do begin to see yourself differently. You begin to see yourself beyond your labels, beyond your titles, beyond human being. You begin to question. You begin to feel and notice something is deeper or different, more, if you will. And, of course, in that seeking, there is that finding. So that's a big part of the path. And it happens to many and is happening to more and more individuals. And so this is really a place to kind of ground that inside information and connect in. Those of you that are coming from perhaps an Eastern philosophy or tradition, it is your Sangha or satsang, and connecting in with like-minded individuals to share. And we do have an amazing chat room, which is also renamed as the Sacred Space of Empowerment, where there's a lot of wonderful dialogue usually going on, wonderful questions, a lot of support for people. And so it is another way to connect in, ask questions, and share your insights, share your unfolding. Love to hear from all of you. You can also connect on Facebook, on Awakenings Radio. The Facebook page is called Awakenings Radio, and a lot of connecting there, people sharing, uploading videos, again, these are just spots to check in. There's many of them. And, of course, on Twitter, you can connect with me at AwakeningsTweet and at selfandlight.com. That's selfandlight.com. Or if you'd like to be on the email newsletter list, keep up to date with things that Awakenings Radio is doing, is focused on, as well as myself, that email address is awakeningsradio@gmail.com. And Anne in the chat, thank you, is saying hello to me and glad to catch your show live today. She's been a while since she's been able to listen live. Yeah, a lot of people listening to the archives, which is great. I'm loving it. I'm getting a lot more emails. And I got to tell you guys, I really do mean this. I love getting the email feedback or the comments you're leaving on the Awakenings page, whether you're emailing about guest suggestions or guest relations. You want to email Linda, my right-hand person in the part of the Self and Light posse here. She's at linda@selfinlight.com. And she basically chooses the guests. I have some input, but she really handles all of that and some other things, scheduling for me and some other personal assisting things. But a very awake, aware individual. So she's a love to connect with. So if you have any guest questions or thoughts, that's linda@selfandlight.com, and then all other communications, awakeningsradio@gmail.com, which I absolutely love. Just got an email the other day from someone from the Virgin Islands that's been listening and sharing the word. What I love, too, is a lot of people have been, whether it's guests that we have on, people in the chat room, or myself, things that have been said that people are passing on, that they're finding helpful or beneficial in passing on. And I got to say, and I know you guys have heard me, those of you that are consistent participant listeners, not a week goes by that I don't get an email or a correspondence on the Awakenings Radio page on Facebook that someone is commenting on the chat room, how they love the energy in the chat room, that they feel so supported, and that they love the connecting in the chat room. And they say, oh, it's so warm, it's so welcoming, I got some questions answered. So it's really, really a great, great feedback, I've got to say. So all of you that are in there participating, and I say not just listeners but also participants, just thanks for listening, thanks for supporting Awakenings, but also thanks for supporting yourself and supporting new people that are new to the program and listening and being there. So I have an email question, and I did say that I would answer it on air. Had an email question about on the path, if certain things, actually two people, this is interesting, that's true, two people emailed this, one a couple of weeks ago, and I didn't get to it, and then, interesting enough, another person over the weekend, I got it Monday, the email. So when I see that, that's kind of a synchronicity to say, this is very relevant. All questions are relevant in comments, but when you get to the same, similar question, similar enough, within the same week, that tells me to touch upon this. So the two questions combined were on the path, at some point, do you get to a point where certain things just no longer interest you? And one of them was paying bills and doing stuff like that, more left brain stuff. That's how the one person described it. And the other one was saying that they were just disinterested in certain things that they used to like, certain people. And I'd love your feedback on this, whether you call in at 347-539-5122 is the call-in number to listen or to ask questions or comment, if you have any thoughts on this, or just let me know in the chat room and I'll share it to the people live. Yes, and my answer to that is yes. As we change, as we grow, as we evolve, as we become more authentic in the moment, our likes and dislikes do tend to shift. And we also move into more of a phase of preference where we don't have perhaps extreme dislikes or likes, that those become preferences. And we're tending to prefer that which is more life enhancing, that which is more supportive of our true nature. And so sometimes if people and situations aren't reflecting this, aren't supporting this, we don't really want to go towards it. So there's a saying in the I Ching, why would one want fruit that isn't ripe? And so, if something's not ripe or not ready, you can get a tummy ache, right? If a banana is so overly green, it's hard, it's not going to taste good. So we begin to develop a different palate, a palate that is more about that which is life-enhancing. Now, the other thing is we do grow and change, so part of that is that our likes change. We begin to be more supported in what is furthering our growth. So that is also another part of it. And you perhaps begin to be drawn more to left brain predominant focuses or activities, like meditation, unfocused activity, just enjoying the moment, noticing the moment. So yes, there are those changes, and that is naturally a part of the path, and that's also why it's important to get that support. And then Mary in the chat is saying, I used to like politics, charities, technology, and entertainment news. I just don't relate anymore. Yeah, see? So we do really have you focus on that spiritual nourishment more and more. And so certain things do fall away by the wayside. Okay, we have a call here. I want to just make sure if it's not our guest because I'm not sure the number they're calling in. 321-470, you're live on Awakenings.
Good evening, Michelle. It is your guest.
I thought so. Hi, Thomas. Tomas, how are you?
Hi, how are you?
Good. Yeah, it's a different number, but I got than what I was told. great. So we'll just dive right in. I want to let the listeners know a little bit about you. Tomas Vieira is our guest, who's the co-author of the Amazon number one in mysticism bestseller, Take Me to Truth, Undoing the Ego. And I'm very interested in your philosophy and your what is the ego and the stages of awakening as well. So, Tomas, welcome to the program.
Hey, thanks, Michelle. Thank you for having me on. It's a pleasure to be with you. Well, I'm in Belgium, actually, at the moment, calling you, so we're 9 o'clock at night here.
Oh, I love Belgium. Where in Belgium?
Just outside Antwerp.
Oh, okay. Wonderful. It's a little bit of the old country there. Some wonderful architecture in Belgium.
Isn't it beautiful? All through Europe, it's just wonderful.
Yes.
So beautiful. So much history, so much culture.
Yeah, there's something to be said about, the United States is the baby in the bunch, and it shows in our architecture here, so.
Yeah.
Among other things. But, so that's wonderful that you could join us from that distance and bring a little bit of that energy to us at Awakenings here.
It's a pleasure.
So, Tomas, I'd love to get a little bit about your background and how you came to co-author this book. What was the impetus of that? So perhaps a little bit of your first awakening on the path?
Yeah, I guess preceding any awakening, it's certainly my experience and many others, is a period of disillusionment first. So I guess my path to wanting to wake up was brought about by a series of life disappointments where it's like, okay, it's not really working out. And that famous line, right, which is, there's got to be another way.
Yes, exactly. That's the first cue, right, or clue, yeah.
That is the first cue. And that's really where, I guess, it all started. I mean, I was married at the time to my co-author, and we'd been married for about 6 years, and despite our best intentions and great love for each other, we still found that our behavior and our thinking was getting in the way, and that somehow this seemed at the time to be out of our control, and I think that's what really got us to a point where we were on our knees saying, look, there has to be another way. We've got to do something. We'd done a whole bunch of programs, and we'd done a whole lot of reading, and we'd been to, you know, counseling and all of that, and I'm sure your listeners will relate to all this stuff. And yet still there was this seemingly unmovable core that just wanted to sabotage it, I guess, sabotage ourselves and our relationship. And about 6 years into the relationship was when we found, in our case, a publication called A Course in Miracles, who, again, listeners might be familiar with that. And for us, it was like when we found A Course in Miracles, that was the beginning. And from then on, we've been working through that. And interestingly, about 10 years into it, what we found, and we certainly don't advocate this, it was just what we did. Mm-hmm. But what we found was that the ego, which is, and we'll talk more about that later, but it was still there sabotaging us, and yet we firmly believe that love is real. We believe that love is real, it is eternal, it is changeless, and that you can trust it. So we said, well, if that's real, let's find out, because the form of the relationship, being the marriage, was actually still breeding insecurity, especially for me, because I was like, if it wasn't for this marriage, well, she may not be with me. And what that tends to do is, of course, bring up fear. Fear has to go somewhere. It gets projected outward and manifests in forms like control, manipulation, anger, the usuals, you know. So what we decided to do was say, let's find out if love is real. And we did a crazy thing, which was that we actually separated and divorced while holding hands, you might say, and discovered that the love was there. And Nook has since remarried. I'm from Australia. Both of us are from Australia. Nook has since remarried in the States, and I spend now 6 months probably of the year there with her and her new husband, and we have written this bestseller, Take Me to Truth, which is all about discovering that love is real and we are love. We are all manifestation
Tomas,
of that love.
Tomas, as you're speaking, I'm hearing in my mind that this is such a wonderful example of how the love always remains. Even in the most torrid divorce, there is still love there. That's never diminished. The relationship may change, or the dynamic, or the structure of the relationship may change, but the love is still there. How are you both able to see that and feel that when you were going through this transition?
Within that time frame of the transition, what we learned was trust, and that's why our book is very much about the six stages of the development of trust, as A Course in Miracles refers to it, which are the same as the six stages of awakening, which are the same six stages as the six stages of undoing the ego, right? And that is about actually allowing our beliefs, our fears, our opinions to surface, to have them looked at, reinterpreted, and then to have the courage to let them go. So what I'm saying is that through that period, of course, the ego's there screaming at both of us saying, are you guys crazy? And you will lose each other, and look what the world is saying about what you guys are doing, and so on. But we believed that what we wanted more than anything, and when I say more than anything, more than your traditional relationship ideas of ownership, belonging, exclusivity, having, getting, we wanted to know love more than that, and through this process of undoing, of allowing our limited and fearsome views to surface and be reinterpreted by the divine, that love is indeed real, and that we did find each other. And, you know, to cut to the happy ending, if you like, of where we're at now, there's really only one difference in our relationship. And that's at the level of form, not at the level of soul or spirit or mind. At the level of form, Nook and I don't have sex. That's it.
Mm-hmm.
That's it. And you know, the funny thing is that 20 years ago, if I'd listened to a program like this in my fearsome state of relationship, I would have been like, you're scaring the crap out of me, number one. And number two, what do you mean no sex?
Everyone has to, own. It becomes a type of ownership.
Yeah.
Right? That's
where it's really
coming from, right?
Yep. And yet it's not till you get to the other side that you realize, oh my God, you know, what we all want, I believe, and I think in this process, part of what I've found was that what we all want is to be seen. Love is truly being seen by somebody else, as in, wow, you accept me really as I am, without any judgment, without guilt, and without shame. That's what I found were two big words, guilt and shame, because, you know, most of us, unless we were raised by ascended masters, and I don't think there's many of us around in this walking this dimension that were raised by them, most of us were unseen ourselves as children. Most of us, ever since we've opened our eyes, all we crave for is that love. And the ultimate love, of course, is the love of the divine and entering that relationship. But the next substitute for that is initially with our family when we're kids, and then when we grow up, hopefully with a partner or a significant other. And in there, all of that struggle and sacrifice and pain and suffering and hardship and work is just us trying to say to each other, please can you see me without judging? Please can you just accept me as I am?
Yeah.
And I think that's the beauty, is that we really can have that. We really can experience that if we would just give that which we most wish to receive. Because we're all so busy out there choking the living you-know-whats out of each other, saying, give it to me! Give me that unconditional love! See me! Look at how much I'm doing for you! Look how much I love you! Right? And yet, the simple way of achieving that is actually through overlooking error in the other person and then giving that which we most wish to receive.
And, and you know, Tomas,
so simple,
when you're
so difficult.
When you're saying this, you know, one of my, because I'm so in resonance with what you're saying. One of my biggest, I think, where this it developed or big contention of this is the whole, and because you speak in your book about. You know, basically the programming or repattern, you know, the pattern of the ego. And I think the belief that if you give a lot, you receive a lot. I think when people have that intention that they're giving to receive, that Right? This totally sets up what you're saying. You know, just what, you know, look at what I've given to you. And
yeah.
I don't know about you, but isn't that? Yeah. And I so agree with you. I've seen most of the people that I work with, like, let's say with, you know, couples counseling or just along the path, you meet people. It always is that. It, just what you're saying. I never thought of it this way until you're saying it now. It's always the other person saying, they're not giving me this. I do this
yeah.
and they don't give me this. And it's such
yeah.
a focus.
Yeah.
And I'm wondering,
yeah.
from your standpoint.
That's our programming, right?
Yes. Where does this come from and
yeah.
how to undo that?
Yeah.
Because people are essentially getting in relationship to get something.
Yep.
And yeah.
so long as we're in it to get something, we're screwed.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly.
It's
yes,
a long, slippery slide.
Yes, exactly. In those very technical terms, yes, you are
yes.
screwed. But that's a whole, how do we do, that's a whole undoing.
Yes.
Because in a sense, it's like a sonar is going out, and the programming is, I'm going to give
yes.
a lot, so I get a lot. I'm going to own somebody, I'm going to get something and give,
yes.
and then there's keeping score, you
yes.
know.
That's, well, that's the whole ego programming. I mean, the ego has a mantra, and the ego's mantra is seek and do not find. So it's all for seeking. It's all about, yeah, let's go out there, let's go get them, and let's be successful, and let's do this and that. But unless and until we're ready to actually look within and then reveal the our patterns and then release them, all that's going to happen is that this ego will continue to sabotage us, because that is its role and its job. It is that part of us that's a will apart from the divine. And it's that separated self. It's the part that thinks it ran away from home, thinks it's all alone, and says to us, you are all alone, so there is no divine, so you better listen to me. And we do. We unconsciously do. And it's like the default program. Most of us, unless we're in the computer industry, turn on our computers and hope it works. We haven't got a clue how it works. We just want it to work. And so long as it gives us answers, we're happy with it. And that's the way the ego is. We get up in the morning and we're all programmed to believe, and in fact it's a right of ours, right? Go forth and seek your love and your happiness. So we do. But we're never told that this love and happiness that we seek is not going to come in the form that we expect. In other words, until we actually undo the ego, until we learn about our authentic self, until we dare to face our fears, that ego is just going to keep us out there at it and keep disappointing us.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm sure you see it, and I'm sure your listeners, again, can relate to this, you know, relationship after relationship, and it seems to sabotage us, and we don't know where to turn, and ultimately the ego is still there saying to us, it's your fault, which it isn't, you know, it's just this programming, and it says to us, it's just that you're not good enough, you're not worthy, all this crap that it tells us, and none of that is true. The ego is speaking about itself when it says that. Who we are is a divine being. Who we are is eternal. Who we are is love. Who we are does know the answer, doesn't have the solution. But do we turn to it? In our workshops, we often refer to consulting the ego to like consulting dumb guy. You know, it's like you've got a problem, and who do we turn to? We have the ever-present, all-knowing God, and then we have dumb guy. And we turn to dumb guy. And we go, what do you think we should do? And dumb guy always tells us, well, you know, it's so-and-so's fault. And if it's not, then it says, well, you know, it's your fault. You know you've never been good enough. you know you keep screwing up, and you've just screwed up again.
And of course, in a sense, and correct me if you're wrong, if I'm wrong, you're talking about the constructed ego, the programming that
yes.
many of us have received. That, like you're saying, the dumb guy, people keep going back to. They keep going back to,
yep.
which really amazes me. I think until, and when we get into the stages, maybe you can touch on this in awakening. On my own personal path and what I see with working with people, until you get to a certain level of connectedness, awareness, you know, awakeness, connected to that authentic self, you really do keep playing the same program. You know, even though there's a block or a brick there, a wall to the left, you keep going to the left, going to the. It's almost like a knee-jerk. Yes, what is that? That knee-jerk. You know, even though you see the wall, you go, okay, I'm going into the wall. I see it. I'm going into the wall.
Yes.
And what is your thought?
It comes from a mistaken, and I do stress that word, mistaken belief that we are less than the divine. So it's almost like, well, we don't really deserve better anyway. And that's the unconscious programming. Mm-hmm. At the seat of it is our unworthiness. If we truly knew how worthy we were, we would make different choices. And so that's what the awakening process is about, right? It's about reclaiming the spiritual power of who we are. It doesn't matter what course or, you know, what dogma you're into or religion or belief. You know, the truth is true and nothing else is true. So the words may change, but at the core of it, it's all about know thyself, right? And unfortunately, you know, if you think back, imagine if we could plonk ourselves, do a bit of time travel way back several centuries, and we find ourselves sitting amongst a group of scholars, and they're all saying, well, you know, I wouldn't journey too far out over there because the world is flat and you will just fall off. Now, everybody believed that, so we all just huddled around, looked at each other, confirmed each other's belief, and went, right, it is so. And then it wasn't until much later that we discovered, oh my goodness, the world isn't flat. Well, it's a bit like this programming here that we have. When we look around us, in the media, in our own familial lives, in the lives of others that have gone before us, all we see are people who have trodden this same mistaken pathway. Mm-hmm. One of those keys that we talk about in Take Me to Truth is around this concept of sacrifice. The ego actually thinks sacrifice is love. And we all know, once we start waking up, that sacrifice demands a payment at some point.
Oh, yeah.
So you see
that's
people, right?
Yes,
so
a very
you've
good
got
point.
People that's like, isn't it? Because they're like, oh, I just like giving bull.
Mm-hmm.
You know, what the ego keeps hidden from us is that every time we give, when we're not giving from that space of the divine, we're going to keep score of it. And somewhere down the track, we will demand a payment. It may be indirect, because sometimes the ego is pretty clever, so it won't demand payment of that person, but it'll demand payment from you or another. In some way, we must suffer.
Someone is going to pay.
Right? So,
that's right. Someone's going to pay,
Somebody will pay. And we know when we're giving from love, and when we're giving from fear or from unworthiness. When we give from unworthiness, we come home and we're tired. We're pooped.
Mm-hmm.
It's drained us. We're knocked out. And that's because the ego has no capacity to give from, because it's an empty vessel to begin with. So when we give from that space, that's why we demand payment later, because we feel horrible inside afterwards. And we resent ourselves or others for putting us up to this. Whereas when we give from love, we know the difference. We don't count the scores. We come home invigorated. We feel so much better. And miraculously, we have even more to give. There's no
something again that you just said, Tomas. Because now it's interesting because obviously, if you're giving from the ego since it isn't real, you're always going to have a deficit.
Yeah.
Right. You're always
exactly.
going to be right.
Yeah.
Not enough.
Yep.
That's a really good point. Now we have a question in the chat from Mary.
Sure.
How does responsibility relate to the ego? Are there some times when sacrifice is called for, as in the welfare of a child? What are your thoughts on that, Tomas?
Okay. Well, you see, it's like until we can clearly see what love is in one column, okay, and the actions that stem from love, and what comes from fear in the other column, the ego can be very tricky because, again, just in that question, responsibility, very loaded word, a child, very loaded emotional word, right? What should we do?
Exactly.
And therefore, is sacrifice then sometimes? You see, what I would say is this. If a child's in danger, you're going to act out of love, aren't you, to save it? It's almost a fight or flight thing. It's involuntary. Any child. So that certainly wouldn't be the ego. However, and I'll just talk about my own case. I used to be a CEO there for a little while. And, you know, I'd come home 7 o'clock, 8 o'clock at night, cranky, tired. And I might get upset with my daughter because she didn't do her homework or whatever. And I would get upset in a justified manner saying that, you know, I worked so hard to put you into a private school because I love you. How many parents say that? Or those sorts
Mine
of words?
Did.
Now,
oh, yeah.
Yep.
I remember.
Right? Right.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
You see, that would be an example of where we believe sacrifice is actually called for and noble, wrong. Why? Because it's not about what we do, it's about our intention. And when I examined my intention, it made me cry, frankly, because not over that incident, but over so, so many incidents in my parenting, where when I reviewed them with the divine, as in consulting the teacher within, to ask what was my intent truly in that scenario and this scenario and so on. Well, the education thing wasn't from love, it was from fear. It was really at the root of it, what I was saying might as well have been, look, kid, it's a scary, lonely, frightening world out there. I'm busting my ass for you. It's not that I don't believe that there's a God, but I'm sure as hell know that that God isn't there for you because I have to control this situation. See, control is of the ego. And when I saw that, I could see clearly that had nothing to do with love. It wouldn't matter if she went to a state school, a private school, or no school. There is a God that loves all of us, right? And the divine within her will guide her. So, in fact, what I was doing was expressing the fact that I had no faith. So it's a roundabout way of answering that because, you see, the ego always wants to find easy answers like, is this right or is that right? Is this right or is that wrong? When in truth, it's not about what we do. It's what is your intent? Both of us can leave this radio program now and, for example, go visit our elderly aunt or something, right?
Mm.
Now, one of us could leave that experience feeling rejuvenated and the other one with a migraine headache.
Mm. Mm-hmm.
Both doing the same thing. because one of us might have gone with love in our heart and the other one with a stone, with a sense of begrudging, with a sense of sacrifice. So it's not about what you do, but it is, in this process of undoing the ego, it is about examining why. Why are you thinking that? Why are you doing that? And in very simple terms, are you coming from love or are you coming from fear? And if I can just finish that point with this one thing, what is beautifully said in the Course was this. It says in the Course in Miracles, there are only two things and only one of them is real. I just love that line. So the two things, love and fear, and only one of them is real. The other is a foreign concept, a mistaken idea that we've taken on board as real. Much as back in the day we said, well, the world is flat, and everybody agreed and said, it's real. Well, it wasn't real. In the same way, fear isn't real, but we buy into it. That's part of that unconscious programming. We buy into it because we think we're unworthy. So we think, oh, I better be careful. There is nobody else to look after all of this, so I have to take control.
Now, we have a question, which I think that ties into the ego from Chad. Without ego, who would be responsible? So when that listener participant in the chat,
that.
Isn't that great?
That's beautiful. And so, you know, thank you for these. Keep the questions coming. We think that's a beautiful question because until we actually begin on the awakening journey to discover that we are a spirit being, we think we are the ego. For example, Tomas thought that he was Tomas. I thought that I'm in charge. I thought that there is only me, me meaning the physical form, me meaning my thoughts, my emotions, my feelings, etc. It wasn't until much later when I began this journey of awakening that I recognized that all of who I thought I was wasn't me at all. Who is me is a divine being. For some listeners who might be having a hard time with this concept, another way of getting in touch with that is the word intuition. We've all had that. Where did that come from? Gut feeling. What's that about? How can it be that sometimes when we have a problem, we can spend days and weeks problem solving, coming up with 101 different possible solutions, and then one night we say, you know what, there's got to be another way. We go to sleep, and we wake up the next day, and we come up with an answer we never even dreamed of. And what's more, it doesn't make sense logically. And further to that, we end up following it, and it turns out to be the right answer. We can call it intuition. We can call it a gut feeling. I call it our spirit. So no, if the ego is not in charge, who is in charge? Our spirit. It's just that we haven't learned to listen to it.
Now, I have an email question about this goes into something that I've talked about is that, it sounds like you're talking about is the constructed ego. Is there also is a philosophy that the personality, what the ego self or personality, is an outpicturing or physical manifestation of the soul? It's that individuated aspect of all that is. The problem is that people take on the socialized or programmed or construct an ego. You have any thought on that?
What I'd say is this,
it's a bit of semantics,
but... Well, I guess for me, when I think of this, all I can think of is in terms of the waking up journey, it's actually about us getting out of the way. Mm-hmm. If we can get out of the way, the divine can use this body. The divine that's within us can actually fulfill its purpose. And you know, this thing about, you know, some people go, well, I don't believe in a God, or I don't believe, you know, I'm an atheist. And, well, that's fine. That's all fine, except there's something that's common to all of us, which is that there's this deep yearning within each of us that we can't explain away and that we can't get rid of. And what is this deep yearning? And I believe that this deep yearning is the yearning of our spirit wanting to be able to express itself in this life. What's happened is that as we constructed our ego and we have this brain and this intellect and these senses, it's like we've run with it, if you know what I mean. It's like as we've grown, we've gone, wow, this is me. Great, I'm going to use this me. I'm going to use this brain. I'm going to use these senses. And then we outpicture our projections of what we believe this world's going to be. And then for most of us, what happens at some stage in our life is this period of disillusionment that I speak about. And then we go, okay, there's got to be another way. At which point, we then begin deconstructing all that we constructed so that we can get back to that place where we say, now hang on a minute, I made all of this up. I do have a choice, however, to start fresh and to actually see a different picture. How do we see a different picture? By allowing the divine within us to tell us who we are, what we're into, what we like, what we dislike. I'm sure you've seen it in the work that you've done with your clients and friends and so on. You can have people that actually, hand on heart, tell you, I am into this or that, or I believe in this and I believe in that. And then 1 year later, come back to you and go, I renounce all of that.
Yeah.
I know, you know, and we see it especially like in professions where parents have hammered it into kids about being a doctor or a lawyer or a builder or whatever it is, carpenter and so on. And then you see people in their in midlife crisis. What is that crisis? That crisis is that awakening where they go, you know what, that was full of bull. All I was doing was following my family because I didn't want to upset them. I have just found out at the age of 40, whatever, I don't like this, whatever it is, profession. Right? What is that about? See, that's the awakening process.
Yeah. I find the more awake, at least for myself, that I become and, you know, in the unpeeling, is that I have less labels or less words. I am what I am in the moment. I am that.
Beautiful.
And I think, right, and I think a part of one stage of awakening is where you do need to label it's this or that or that or this or it was this and it's this, or it's divine self or ego self or constructed ego and it's this and it's that. I think that's part of that process, like a contemplative meditation. But then I think at some point it begins to merge as one.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
What's your thought of
yeah.
that? And then you move into that kind of responding mode.
Well, if we look at the six stages of undoing the ego that we have in our book, which we actually discovered within A Course in Miracles, where it's described in only two pages as the process of the development of trust.
Mm-hmm.
What we found was this, was that stage, and we found this to be consistent amongst our friends, regardless of their ideology, okay? So,
okay.
And I'll give this to you in a nutshell. Stage one is called the undoing. This is where it's like we've been asleep all our lives. We've just let the programming run us. We've reacted, right? which is just simply being reactive to all of our programming from our childhood, our beliefs that were foisted on us, that we took on board later, so on and so on. But there comes a collision, and that collision may well be a relationship breakdown, a period of unemployment, a health scare, someone you love is affected in some way, whatever it is. It's just enough to wake us up for a moment, and we go, uh-oh, what's going on? Now, the ego being what it is, will try and put us back, will try and put the situation back together again as it was, which is like putting Humpty Dumpty back together again, but it still tries to just return us back to normality, you know, back in the box. If we, however, resist that temptation to simply rebuild and therefore go back to sleep, we'll actually move to stage two, which is called sorting out, which is what you're talking about there, which is about actually finding out what's valuable and what's valueless. Who am I in all of this? What do I really want? Am I here playing this role because I really want to? Or somehow is there an obligation? And where does that obligation come from, if not unworthiness, and so on and so on? So this is where we start examining ourselves. And most, I believe, most of us in this world, until we begin awakening, spend our lives in stage one and stage two. Mm-hmm. We try and sort it out, but it's all muddled, and eventually we go back and we screw up and, you know, we have a few laughs and we get lucky, that's how we call it, and you know, whatever. And it's like you wake up every day and you put your helmet on and you say, God, I hope I make it home tonight, and that's it. That's the best we can hope for, you know. We're a victim of the world we see rather than a co-creator of it. But if we actually have the courage, then we'd move to stage three. And stage three, the ego definitely does not like, because this stage is called relinquishment. And the ego hears that word and says, you see, there's that word, loss. We don't like loss. We're not going to have any loss. So we're not going there. We're going to stay safe. We're going to stay in our status quo. We're going to stay in this job even though we hate it. We're going to stay in this relationship even though we don't like it. We're going to keep saying yes even though we want to say no, because at least it gives us some level of security, the ego tells us. But if we dare to go to stage three, what it's about is the relinquishment, not of anything that's valuable, but only of what was valueless. So in Nook and my scenario, what did I relinquish in letting go of the form of the relationship? Well, what I relinquished was, and what both of us relinquished, was a codependency within the relationship. What I personally relinquished was a deep insecurity and fear of being alone. These were the things that don't make it across in that journey. All that was valueless gets left behind. But it takes trust, because you don't know what the outcome is going to be. All you can go on is a faith and a belief that love is real. In other words, that goodness is inherent, that it's there. And it's there for you, and it's there for me, it's there for all of us, that belief. Mm-hmm. If we dare to do that, we'll move to stage three. And then from stage three, well, it's usually not just one incident, although, of course, there have been people that have had an instantaneous awakening. And even that's a joke, because if you look at Eckhart Tolle, for example, who woke up one day, so to speak, yes, but he, as he will tell you, yes, he woke up one day after several years on a bench, right?
Yeah, so, I think, well, that's a mental construct when people think it happens just once. You know,
exactly.
Or just boom, right? You wish, like you think,
You wish, you know? But so most of us will go through this stage one, two, three over a number of issues. And some of those issues will be our sacred cows or greatest fears, loss of income, money, health issues, whatever that it is that we're so scared of losing or experiencing. But those experiences, if we look at them in the right way, which is actually the right way, meaning that we actually ask the divine to help us interpret it rather than use our limited capacity of our brain, we'll actually get some answers that are worthwhile. And so if we do this several times, we start developing trust. And so then we can move on from that point to stage four, which is a period of settling down, then to stage five, where it's unsettling again, because and I understand why it needs to be, because otherwise the ego would jump back in and say, you see, I am enlightened, when really there is no I to be enlightened. We are all part of God. Another way of saying that, if we look at the sunshine, can you name a particular ray of that sunshine? It would be impossible. Or a drop in the ocean. As it's coming down from the sky, you can identify that drop, and once it meets a pool of water and enters the sea, where is that drop gone? We are the sea, we are the sun, we are the light, we are the air, we are everything. So really it's about undoing the ego. Is also very much about undoing this I concept, this mistaken identity. And then we get
otherwise you move into that spiritual arrogance or spiritual materialism.
Oh yeah.
Right?
Yes.
Which is
yes.
Yeah.
Yeah, we've certainly seen enough of that, haven't we?
Yeah, exactly. I have good friends around me and teachers. I say, if I ever utter certain things, please remind me.
Yeah, isn't that lovely?
Years ago. Right. You know.
I keep telling my loved ones, right, to, you know, if ever they see me getting serious or like getting upset about something, please do not forget to laugh at me.
Yeah.
At me.
Yeah.
Because it's then when we realize, hey, hang on a minute, you know, what's going on here? And laughter is so important. And which leads us to this stage six, which is achievement in a sense. But when we say achievement, here's the funny thing. Achievement really means now we can start living. It isn't the end. It is just the beginning. Up till then, we're just having a near life experience. It's like the Matrix. That's all that's happening. I love that line in the Matrix where he says, yeah, you think you're breathing oxygen, do you?
that's another little wake-up call there.
Yeah.
We do have a question here. I just jotted, going back to that ego, would you say that the ego tends to have many personas or masks in carrying out its role?
Oh, totally. It will... It'll take on whatever it needs. It's like the Terminator. It just doesn't stop. You know, you have to be diligent. It's like it'll knock on your front door as the pizza delivery guy. You close the door, and it'll be at the back door masqueraded as something else, and you'll close that, and it'll enter the window as an animal, and you'll close. You know what I mean? It's like it's going to try to get in all the time, and so in that way, it is very much the persona. So think about it. For most of us, when we, in the course of a normal day, if we have family and we work, let's say, so I wake up and I'll have maybe a face for my partner. And then 10 minutes later, I'm there with the kids and I might have a face for them, which has a different personality and a different threshold and a different tolerance setting for them. And then, and even with my partner, if we're in lover mode, then that might be a different setting as opposed to when we're in negotiating mode over the budget of the household or over the chores in the house. So with one person, we will already have different faces. Then with our children, maybe a different face again. Then we go to work and we have a different face for our employer and a different face towards our employees, and a different face towards our customers and our clients, and so on and so on. And then different tolerances for the people that we meet right through the day, depending on whether our ego assesses them to be worthy or unworthy of our attention. So when you think about it, right through the day, where is the real tamas, for example, in all of that? And it's no wonder problem solving is so difficult. It's no wonder we go to sleep with anxiety. It's no wonder we seek out outside help in the form of, you know, the medication that's rising and our medical bills that are rising and all our psychological bills and so on. We're seeking everywhere for people shaking them, saying, tell me I'm okay. Tell me who I am. We never turn within where the answer has always been to show us, right, who we actually are.
And let me ask you, do you feel that it's really our over-identification or attachment that, again, I am this, I am that, I am this role. Now if I'm doing this role, I have to act this way.
Yes, such a great question, because that's it. That's all those personas, right? Imagine if we could detach from it. You know, Jesus, amongst others, you know, not only him, but all the great masters all talked about this thing, detach. Jesus said it in terms of saying, hey, okay, you want to be in this world? All right, that's fine. Just don't be of it. And what he was meaning by that is that, you're going to have a family. Yeah, you're going to have a job. Yeah, you're going to have relationships. But you are beyond all of that. And what the ego interprets when it hears that is, see, that means you're uncaring. No, totally the opposite. When we're detached, it means that we're above the battlefield. It means we're actually able to get a much better perspective, which means that our actions then are going to be more loving than when we are attached, because when we're attached, we get into fear so much quicker. We get into attack and defense so much quicker when we're attached. I mean, why is it that if you listen to my problems, you can sit there and go, oh, well, you know, you can just do this and do that, right? Whereas when it's your own problems, it's like, don't talk to me like that. This is serious.
right, exactly. That's a really good point. You know, but as we're speaking, it's really about the constructions that we've been taught, like you said earlier, to keep ourselves safe.
Yeah.
You know, in misguidingly being taught that we're separate. So if we're separate and we're on our own, then things are scary. And if things are scary, you better construct some things to protect you from the unscary.
Yeah, beautifully said. Beautifully said. Beautifully said, Michelle. Because, like, and yet, if we turn to the divine, in whatever concept or words you want to use for that term, then it's like, wow, hang on. If I'm eternal and part of the divine, and divine is love, what protection do I need? And that doesn't mean, okay, you know, that doesn't mean like, all right, I'm going to sell up everything and get my loincloth on and my begging bowl and head down to the street corner. You know, it's not about that. But what it is about is that when we have that level of trust, it's like nature, right? It's like the animals. I mean, I was watching a flock of pigeons the other day, and I saw this one pigeon that had one of its legs was deformed, and the other one was a stump, right? But he was carrying on like all the other pigeons, right? You don't see him concerned about, oh my God, this is a stump, what am I going to do, who's going to look after me, what's going to happen, you know what I mean? What am I going to eat? What I mean is that they just live, and the essence of that life and the energy that comes through is the same essence for us. And what I mean by that is that if we have any concerns at all, the divine will whisper that answer to us. So it's not about us just lying, you know, giving up everything and standing on a street corner and praying for forgiveness and hope to be looked after, or being a lazy bum then and just saying, well, I'll stay in bed, I'll be looked after. It's not about that. What it's about is that turning within and saying, oh, I'm feeling scared. Now, before I do anything, in fact, I won't do anything until you speak to me.
Mm-hmm.
And this is then about learning to trust that you have, we have, a friend within, a brother within, a sister within, who will guide us unerringly and answer us 100% of the time. Right? And that's when we move. We only move when we hear that voice. But what do? As soon as anything happens, the ego moves into problem solving, right? Straight away. Let's fix this. There's something wrong with this picture. Let's fix it. Whereas when we're with spirit, what we do is go, oh, picture's changed. Feeling uncomfortable. Feeling scared. Okay, what's going on? And not us trying to figure it out with our little pea brain, but us actually going inside where we can tap into that universal library, right, that we all have access to. And that access to that library has nothing to do with worthiness, because we already are worthy. And what happens for many of us is that we say, oh, he's not going to answer me, or she's not going to answer me, or, you know, there's nobody to help me. Look, I've been a bad person, or look at the bad things that I've done, or, you know, whatever. But it's simply not true. That information is there for all of us. It's like the sun shining once again. I mean, the sun shines on all of us, doesn't it? When the sun is out, it's out. It doesn't say, Tomas, you have been bad, we will not shine on you today. If it's out, it's out.
Where do you think now, obviously, this the constructed ego, or this, you know, you're wrong or something's wrong with you, do you feel that it was created or first created as a defense mechanism or a survival mechanism?
Yes, I think the ego tells us that it's a survival mechanism. What I'd like to believe is this. It's a bit like the story of the prodigal son, right? Another way of saying that, the kind of Adam and Eve type story where we're given free will and we say, hey, let's go make a world of our own. Mm-hmm. Let's go have a go at this. And at some point we recognize maybe that wasn't such a good idea. you know, because we left everything that we ever had, and we came to this place, and in the story of the prodigal son, it's like, and now we've blown all our money, and we're begging the farmer next door for his pig swirl, and that doesn't taste so good. So I think that's kind of more what I believe, except the one qualification in this is that we didn't actually leave anywhere. It was just a thought.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's just a dream, you know. We're home safe, right? We're home safe. We never left. We're having an experience in whole life, undoubtedly. But we never left home. The essence of who we are is safe. So there's nothing to be afraid of in that sense, because, you know, the fear is only because we do believe that we are alone, you know, and so we constructed this mechanism that is the ego that tells us, I'm here to protect you, which it's not, of course. It's here to do nothing more than cause us pain and suffering.
Mm-hmm.
Because of that awful guilt, you know, it's like a comedy. It's like saying to us, look, you ran away from home and you feel like shit. You feel awful because you ran away from home. So I'll tell you what, I'm going to kick your ass, okay? All your life, I'm going to make you feel miserable and horrible. But at least when you die, and you face the big guy, you can tell him, I flogged your ass all this time, so hopefully he won't punish you as much.
Yeah. Well, that's why I'm saying it came from people. There was some constructing there. Because,
yep.
You know, I remember years ago, you know, I was in, you know, modeling and television, and, you know, my agents would say, oh, Michelle, please don't tell them about your psychic or the other things that you're involved in. And I was like, why? Well, you might scare some, just don't, you know, which I never listened, but that person, they were trying to construct my ego. Don't show this part of you. And how many people have grown up with that, and it's in the fabric of our society?
Yes.
Don't show that.
Yes.
Don't say that. Don't talk about. Don't mention God. I mean, God, you know, even in schools, you can't mention God or meditation because,
yeah.
You know, I'm not sure why, but everybody all of a sudden, I mean, rather you say a four-letter word, which we know,
yes.
You know, or a cuss word or whatever, then say God.
Right. And I would like to qualify this because, you know, God, again, is just a name, you know. So for any of your listeners, like I myself, I'm a recovering Catholic. That's what I'd call myself, you know. After many years of guilt, you know, I'm recovering from that. So initially for me even to use the words like Jesus and God were difficult. Because it was like, oh my goodness, that's where all that guilt and horrible stuff came from for me.
Mm-hmm.
So for any of those that are out there listening that are recovering like myself, you know, just use any other name. Call it salami sandwich, ham sandwich,
mm-hmm.
croissant, whatever name you want.
Well, I did my dissertation on God as God as an energy. So it's that, to me, that...
Yes.
It is the resonant field or life force, animating energy, pranic energy, whatever, Shakti, you know.
Beautiful.
You know, but I agree with you. There is that kind of triggering or button, and I guess where does that come from? It's again, as you were saying, the ego.
Yeah. And you know, like, I think it is worth looking at nature where, you know, we talk about energy, as you just said, and that we are one, whether it's a rock or us or a bird or whatever else. And if you look at the way they behave in that sense, it's like, well, they just do their thing, you know. They don't have this protectionism thing other than if they're threatened at that time, right? And then again, it's a reaction. So there isn't this kind of forward thinking. You know, we're blessed with all this planning and forward thinking, but really it's a hindrance because the ego grabs that and says, great, now that you can think about the future, let's worry together.
Yeah, I love that.
Let's spend the night worrying.
In your focused work on this and your work also took the form of some wonderful CDs, a CD set, which actually I want to let people know they can get through it, Sounds True, A Miracle of Trust, and now the book. In your study, your research, your focusing, do you think and feel we can undo this? And do you see an undoing, not just on an individual level, but a collective level of this constructed ego, of this influence, if you will?
Yeah, I believe 100% fully that that the undoing can take place and B is taking place, and I think that it's a wonderful time globally that we're going through right now. Some might say, are you kidding? Look at global warming. Look at the financial crisis that we've just had and the rates of unemployment, look at the, you know, all of this stuff. And I'd say, exactly, this is great. Why is it great? Because it's helping all of us to reprioritize our goals from an era of materialism into one where we're seeking for deeper inner peace, where a job and a pay packet isn't enough and we want purpose. So all of us have got that yearning more and more, and as the heat is being turned up, and the world becomes a smaller village where we have to cooperate, where we have to collaborate. This is all good, because you can't collaborate and cooperate when you have a fully blown ego. It's impossible, because you're just saying,
yeah,
mine, mine, mine.
Yeah.
All mine. So I think it's great, and I think it's happening, and I think we're seeing it even politically at the moment, right? That there is a movement towards peace, and there is a desire that we're seeing. So, and again, you know, for the recovering Catholics and other Christians, I apologize, but you know, Jesus came and said, you know, all this that I do, you can do and more. That's who we are. We are that divinity. We are the manifestation of that, as you said, that energy. We are the energy of that God manifest on this earth, right? And we all have a purpose. And that purpose is about bringing peace to the world. How do we do that? And this is the trick, of course. The trick is to actually bring about peace to the world by accepting the peace for ourselves, by forgiving ourselves first, by accepting that we are truly part of the divine. Because otherwise what we end up doing is just out-picturing again. It's like, you know, I love those guys that are out there doing the whole anti-war thing. I think it's quite funny, because it's like, the news headline, peace protests, 36 arrested today. Oh, very peaceful.
Yeah, exactly.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like, what are you doing?
It's keeping it going,
yeah,
right? It's keeping the dance. Can't
right.
You know, the tango alone.
Yeah. Yeah. It's about us not resisting, right? And this is where, you know, again, a different model, but Gandhi was cool, right? I mean, Gandhi was great, because the guy was just like, hey, peace, and literally meant it, and offered no resistance in any way, shape, or form, right? So that's where it's at. And so I think it's a wonderful time we're all in. We got the 2012 thing going on, happening, and everybody's got different opinions and beliefs around that. Doesn't matter, but it's about bringing up that awareness, right? That things are on the move, things are changing, and finally we do have to change.
I tend to agree with you. I even see with people that aren't sure what's going on, they're definitely, the feathers are ruffled. People are, you know, definitely looking around, looking within, questioning. I'm hearing more people, which tickles me, saying, you know, if everything is just going to shreds or going to pot, I might as well focus on what I really want to do, or might as well find out what I'm supposed to do, or what brings me joy, you know. So I think that perhaps would not be happening on such a large scale if this disruption wasn't happening.
The heat's being turned up in the kitchen, and it's good, because that's like stage one, the undoing, right? It's
the
like
undoing,
the heat's being turned up, and it helps us wake up, and we go, oh, what's going on? It's not as comfortable as it used to be in this picture of mine. What's happening? And it starts the questioning process.
Mm-hmm. So in a way, this is the great. There's a great undoing happening.
Oh, yeah. It sure is, because all those priorities of ours, you know, they're all having to shift and change geopolitically, culturally, where we've got, you know, nations that now, every nation you look at is facing these same issues around their belief systems in terms of their cultures, right? Whereas for a long time it was very monocultural within each country. That's not the case anymore. So now all of a sudden it's like, oh my goodness, my tolerance button is being pressed. My acceptance button is being pressed. We can't get rid of them. How do we get along with them? You know, these are all, right?
Yeah.
So it's happening everywhere, right across the globe. The global warming thing is affecting everyone. The unemployment thing is affecting everybody. So we're all sharing the same sorts of issues, and these same issues all have one commonality. They're making us uncomfortable. So that's good. Now, you see, the ego says, this is doomsville, right? But that's with the ego's eyes. But if we look with the divine's eyes, we'd say, this is great. This is wonderful. Because maybe we're getting to a time where we're going to reorder our priorities. And it begins with me. This is the thing. It begins with me. Because you see many people that out of emotionalism, they then go and volunteer outside to do things. Now, there's nothing wrong with that. But it's what is your intent, as I said before, you see? There's no benefit in going outside, volunteering for an aid organization or whatever it is, or save the dogs, whales, donkeys, whatever it is, and then coming home and harboring an unforgiveness in your heart towards somebody still. Nothing's happened.
Well, you know, it's like being focused on the outer.
You know, you're still going to feel lonely. You're still going to feel isolated. We've got to get on board with this understanding that forgiveness is where it's at. So, I just thought of something there. You know, we're all conditioned or programmed from our parents and so on to go out and seek our love and happiness. And when we're not in love and happiness, the ego says, keep trying harder, you know. Go get some coaching lessons in, you know, people skills or self-esteem or whatever it is. But in fact it's actually about forgiveness of self and others. And in fact, forgiveness of everything. In other words, whatever we're reading in the newspaper, whatever we saw on our drive to work, whatever we listened to on the radio, whatever we saw reported in the newspaper that day, forgiving all of that. Because what happens then is that who we truly are, which is love, starts simply flowing from us because it's our natural inheritance. So all of this seeking for love and happiness, you don't have to do any of that. The energy needs to be spent on the forgiveness. When we spend our energy on forgiveness, automatically the level of love rises within, extends outwards, and is seen by others and attracts others to us. And this is something that's not taught. We're all taught how to go chasing love and happiness. Nobody has actually delivered the truth about this, which is that love and happiness is actually part of your inheritance once you remove the block, being the ego. And how do we remove the block? Forgiveness.
And can you just in the last minutes, because you touched on it a little bit, go into a little bit more that the ego projects our reality?
Yeah, so what happens is that you see, the world would have us believe that the world is happening to us. This is very convenient for the ego because we get to say that we're a victim, right? I woke up today, I don't know what happened, the guy hit me. You know, it's not my fault, the car ran into me. When, in fact, what we're on about and saying here is that, hang on, it's about taking back full responsibility. We are the cause. The effect is what's happening out there. In other words, our thoughts make up everything that we see. People that have seen movies like, you know, What the Bleep and the experiment with water. When we label water with love, those molecules look beautiful. When we label those water with hate, those molecules look angry and fearsome and dark. What's that about? It's the observer effect. That's what we're learning through quantum physics. That, in fact, it's the act of observing that makes it so. In other words, the world that we see is made by us. We need to claim that. So we can no longer take this role that we are simply victims of what we see. Not at all. You are the co-creator of your universe. And so undoing the ego allows us to then repicture the world so that what we then experience is love, is happiness.
Mm-hmm.
That's how we do it, because we're actually responsible. But what the ego does is, if, for example, you were raised in scarcity, there's a fair chance that regardless of how much money you have, you will look and say, I don't have enough. I've got to put away some more. Life's dangerous, and so on and so on. All a trap to keep us in unhappiness.
So it's really a repicturing or shifting that perception is what I'm hearing you say then.
Yeah. It is changing that perception. And so the first step of that, of course, is looking at what are our current perceptions, you know?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, you see people with their throwaway lines. You hear it every day, right? Like, oh, typical, that would happen to me. You see? And so, of course, it continues to happen because the universe gives you what you want. So if what you want is, I'm a guy with no luck, well, that's you're going to get it because the universe just wants to give you what you want. So if we're unlucky in love, well, that's how we're going to be. But if we are love, what are we going to attract? If we're ultimate joy and abundance, if we are forgiveness, what are we going to attract?
That's the key. That's the key.
You're
claiming it, right, as you keep naming it, you know, naming and claiming, if you will.
Yep.
Tomas, in this last remaining minutes here, I want to go over a little bit. People can contact you at takemetotruth.com.
Yep.
Okay. So that's for articles, interviews, workshops, just to keep abreast of what's going on. Again, that's takemetotruth.com. And your book, of course, is available on Amazon.
Yeah, they can order that on the website. Yeah.
Okay,
they can
great.
Order our book off our website. You can even order the audio book. It's an MP3 file they can get off our website. They can order our new CD, 6-CD set that we just finished recording with Sounds True. And like you said, there's a whole bunch of free stuff on there for people. And we'd love to hear from them. And thank you, listeners, too, please. Thank you, guys, for your questions. It's wonderful.
Yeah, wonderful, wonderful group. And I want to touch on, too, that the 8-CD set is titled Miracle of Trust, and that's the one that you're speaking of that's available through Sounds True, as well as your website, takemetotruth.com.
Yes. And it walks you through the six stages and what you might expect. So there's nothing to be scared. It's like it guides you through what's going on in your life. And it'll be relevant for anybody who's listening who's currently at that stage where I was at, which is, look, there's got to be another way. This will be helpful, because if you're asking that question, you're ready.
Great.
Thank you.
Thank you. And I want to thank you as well, Tomas, for being on Awakenings. It's been wonderful to have you on the program.
Love you, Michelle. Thank you.
Yeah, lots of love and light to you as well. And thank you, listeners, for tuning in and being part of the Converging Flow by sharing your insight and your inspiration. For more information on our guest, you can go to takemetotruth.com. And, of course, we were speaking of co-author of Take Me to Truth, Undoing the Ego, Tomas Vieira. And again, if you'd like to keep in touch with Awakenings, it's awakeningsradio@gmail.com and awakeningsradio on Facebook and also selfandlight.com. So until next time, shine your light, share your insight, and keep awake. Thank you. Awakening Dares every Wednesday and Friday, 12 p.m. Pacific Time. Until next time, stay awake.